Support for WPR comes from WIPS with Toward One Wisconsin, a conference on equity, diversity, and inclusion, May 7th and 8th in Eau Claire. Registration information and more is at t1w.org.
Many people are off work today for the Martin Luther King Jr. observation, a day to reflect on, in part, the civil rights movement in America. Our next guest says there's a lot of improvement to be made when it comes to civil rights issues here in Wisconsin. In education, for example, fourth and eighth grade black students have the lowest average reading ability in the country with the widest achievement gap of any state.
And black males are incarcerated at the highest rate in the country, meaning that half of all black men will spend time in jail by the time they are 30. And in Wisconsin, African-American babies are three times more likely to die before they turn one than white babies.
Reverend Alex G. of the Fountain of Life Covenant Church has been addressing these issues publicly since he wrote an op-ed in the Capital Times last month titled Justified Anger. He joined us back then to talk about some of the issues. We wanted to have him back on to have more focused discussion on what kind of solutions the state and local communities could aim for. Reverend Alex G. is here with us in the studio. Reverend G., welcome back to Central Time.
It's really wonderful to be here again. Thank you for the invitation.
Well, we laid out some of those statistics. Why, this is a huge question, but why Wisconsin? Why do we have such significant racial disparities even compared with other states?
Well, I mean, I know those statistics so well. I quote them all the time, but every time I hear them, I become a little depressed. So even as you said it, I think I fought back a few tears. I think a number of things can contribute to it. I feel that Wisconsin has, you know, we have the state motto of forward. We want to be progressive in our thinking and our actions. And sometimes because we have a history, you know, Madison's known as the Berkeley of the Midwest. When I travel, people talk about how open and liberal we are. I think sometimes we rest so much on our laurels that we don't think we have any work to do today. Our population of color has increased drastically, but I don't think that we paid attention to disproportionate numbers of African Americans in the criminal justice system as attorneys, judges, teachers, educational administrators. That has not grown accordingly or proportionately. And I think we have this sense that we love everyone, we get along, it doesn't really matter who you are and what your background is. And I think because we look the other way, we've allowed this to happen. One of the things that surprises me is particularly as I do call-in radio programs, I'm actually having an ongoing debate with middle-aged white men who are trying to argue me down that it should not matter what color a mentor is, that it's reverse discrimination for me to insinuate that we need more black male teachers and role models. And some of my strongest childhood advocates and role models are still my friends to this day, like my third grade teacher, Eric Lilliquist. So I'm not saying that we can't do that cross-culturally, but just the fact that we're arguing that it's not important to have that is why I think we continue to have these problems. We're just unaware.
Speaking of awareness, do you think, I mean, those numbers have been bouncing around out there about those disparities, but are Wisconsinites aware of it? Do they feel it? Do they really get it?
I don't think so. I think we're stunned. I think we feel that somehow the numbers are skewed. People have been so silent on the Race to Equity report. But before that, there was the State of Black Madison. And then there was a La Follette report that came out about Milwaukee schools in the 80s, early 90s. I think we keep feeling that we're going to wake up, someone's going to clarify, and they're going to say, this isn't really so bad. Or what we're doing now is we're blaming it on people from Chicago or from the South. So these could not be our people skewing these statistics. They've got to be outsiders.
So there isn't even agreement that there is a problem.
I think because it's getting so much attention, and now because we trail the nation when it comes to the incarceration or lead, whichever way you're looking at it, because of the bad press we're getting, I think we're forced to look at it. And so I think we just kept feeling that it would go away if we just get kind enough people in roles or positions. We tried to fix it without bringing people who are indigenous to the communities that are losing out to the table. And that's a huge mistake.
We mentioned education, incarceration, and health. What do you see as the most alarming things going on in Wisconsin right now?
I would say the achievement gap. Mm-hmm. As you were listing the gap, how we're the worst state in the nation between the achievement gap between black and white students, it's appalling, particularly since every one of our schools in this community is in the backyard or the shadow of the University of Wisconsin. It's unconscionable. That shouldn't happen. And the reason I address that one is because historically for African-Americans who have lacked fathers or economic means education was our way out. And so when educational systems are failing, there's absolutely no way out of abject poverty.
You mentioned earlier that argument with largely middle-aged white men over the idea, the importance of mentors, teachers who are African-American. Why is that important? Why does that make a difference?
Well, it's... Well, let me just say this. We state it as if African-Americans need something that their white counterparts don't. If you just think about your teachers growing up, I'm sure most of them look like you, whether they're male or female. So when I say it would have helped me growing up in Madison, having had only one African-American male teacher in my life, it would have helped me to see more teachers look like me who were interested in science or the humanities or graduate programs. And so we're not saying that African-Americans need something that other people don't. We're saying our white counterparts have always had teachers, administrators, textbooks who look like them. So we're not asking for anything different. We're just saying, hey, us, you know, us too. My daughter has the grades to go to medical school, but in this community, she has never laid eyes on an African-American physician. Ever, and she's 17.
So if I grow up, I see, well, I'm white, if you hadn't caught on, in Radio Land. If I see a white doctor, white teachers, white presidents, politicians, those all kind of become built in as part of my range of options.
Exactly.
And if
it's,
I hadn't seen that, maybe they wouldn't.
Exactly. Because think of the things that you assume you can't do because you've not seen. You've not witnessed someone do because it's done by people of other ethnic backgrounds. And so it's just a way of reinforcement when you see administrators or teachers or people who look like you. And so when all the images are negative, you don't see anything positive in your your textbooks. It just begins to make it just causes you to question what you can or what you can't do.
How do you make that happen? How do you get those role models out there front and center?
Well, the role models are they're interested. They want to get involved. And sometimes there's red tape. I mean, one of the things that I want to talk with the superintendent about, and I sat next to the state superintendent today at the Rotunda, and he and I said that we're going to get together. I want to know why individuals can't have either emergency credentials or whatever the specialized credentials are so that someone, I have an undergraduate degree in African-American history. Why can't I teach at a local high school on a part-time basis? If we have less than 2% students of color, I mean, teachers of color for a school district that's largely becoming multi-ethnic, why can't we do something that's almost a desperate measure to bring more people of color into the classrooms? I think we start right there. Bring volunteers and teachers into the community.
We're speaking with Reverend Alex G. of the Fountain of Life Covenant Church. We're talking about racial disparities in Wisconsin and what might be done to close the gaps.
And we'd like to hear from you. Do you notice racial inequalities in your daily life? Tell us about your experience and what you think can or should be done to change these things. And do you think Reverend G's suggestion that the educational achievement gap is the highest priority to close? We'd like to have you join us. You can call 1-800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.
This is Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, in for Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're back with Reverend Alex G. of the Fountain of Life Covenant Church, and we're discussing how Wisconsinites can help change racial disparities in our state.
And we'd like to hear from you. Do you think Wisconsin has a lot of ground to make up when it comes to racial disparities? What changes would you like to see happen? Call us at 1-800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll get your calls in just a couple of minutes. But first, Reverend G., you've got a community forum coming up. Can you tell us about that?
I sure can. People have been asking since the article was printed on December 18th, what's the next step? And I've wanted to just let the information just steep and brew with people so that we wouldn't just rush to a solution and not really feel the brunt of all those dismal facts. But on Saturday, we're having a town hall meeting. It'll be February 15th from 2 to 4 p.m. At our facility on 633 West Badger Road. And we're going to be meeting with community leaders and helping them to speak into some of the solutions. We don't want to come up with all the solutions. We have ideas of the areas that we want to rally around. But I really feel that this has got to be a community solution. So we want to have town hall meetings where people get to speak their minds and share their suggestions so that they really feel good about the process. And if people want to find out more about that, they can email me at justifiedanger@nehemiah.org. That's N-E-H-E-M-I-A-H.
if we're talking about Madison or any other community or even at a statewide level, who needs to be at the table for this kind of conversation?
I say any concerned individual. I'm receiving emails from mental health professionals, professors, social workers, police officers. I just think people want a place to talk about it. I believe that we have it within us in the greater Madison area to really address these issues. I just think we've just been asleep at the wheel. And so I have been inundated by notices, notes, calls, people just showing up, Googling me, visiting, which is reassuring. People are saying, we want to talk about this. So I feel that there's going to be a strong educational component because there are so many people who are unaware. And once they're educated, they can be real allies for change. So what we want to do is educate those who are learners, let those who want to mingle have chances to interact. And those that are ready to go because they're experienced, who want to plug it into some action, we want to take people and plug them in where they're best prepared to connect. But we want to meet people where they are. But I want the community to know we want to talk about this and not just shove solutions down their throats. Madisonians want to talk.
We'll go to our callers now. We've got Henry on the line in Milwaukee. Henry, hi.
How you doing today?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
Yeah, I want to say regarding suggesting that social workers, police officers, educators are asleep at the wheel, kind of disregards the glaring fact. How about the fathers in these kids' lives being asleep at the wheel or not there altogether? You can't expect a child to go into a world where he's to be educated, no matter how much money you throw at it, when his home life is completely fragmented, or there's an auntie or a grandma raising them. How about babies stop having babies and get more of a family structure, and let's start talking about where it all begins in the home. How about some talk about deadbeat dads?
Henry, thanks for the call. This is a common response, I think, on these issues. It's families that
sure.
are the problem.
But Henry misread or misunderstood my point. I said society. I said our community is asleep at the wheel and not responding to this. My daughter has a father. I was in the delivery room, and there are still things that I need to advocate for because of what's happening to her in terms of being told she can't make it in the National Honor Society. She shouldn't apply to certain schools because she wouldn't make it in, just to have the council pull up her grades and say, oh, you really can go to Vanderbilt. And so those things are happening. But organizations like ours, Nehemiah Churches, we've been teaching personal responsibility forever. But to Henry, just I'd like to address something that Henry mentioned. The bulk of my friends, when I was growing up, lived in subsidized housing and had no fathers. And we grew up. We did not become criminals. We obtained degrees. We were the products of Madison Metropolitan School District. And so there's something else that's going on because I've watched my friends grow up without fathers in their homes. That is terribly alarming. And the African-American leaders are addressing it all the time. But that's not new. The rate at which it's happening is new. But we've watched people overcome this for my entire life. I've watched people who are poor and without fathers succeed, but we have to address the systematic issues. And many of my fellow residents and colleagues don't believe that there are systematic issues that preclude certain students from succeeding at the rate of their white counterparts. And I'm just saying we need both and.
What are some of those systematic issues? What is it? I mean, because that's amazing. What is it at that level that makes the difference between success and failure for how we treat the life of a young kid?
It's perception. It's attitude. If you're not very familiar with someone or their background, there's just certain assumptions that can be made. I have had parents go into parent-teacher conferences to find out that their child was not attending class. And the teacher said, I just stopped marking him absent. So there's absolutely no way for a parent to know that their child is at school and not attending classes. But if the teacher assumes, why put more pressure on the single mom? Why get the kid in greater trouble? Why have a showdown with the mom at a parent-teacher conference? We just won't mark the student absent. Or my growing up in the school district, every year seeing Chapter 7, the slave trade, an African with a chain around his neck. We never talked about the Harlem Renaissance. We never talked about the 16 African-American men who were in Congress during Reconstruction. We never talked about civil rights. It's just always the slave chapter. And when you raise your hands and ask, well, what about the contributions of blacks? And your teacher gives you this blank stare. And so you think that that's all you've ever contributed to the world. Well, those things build inside the soul of a kid, and you dread that chapter because if you've grown up in Madison and you're black, you remember the slave chapter. So they're just systematic things because you don't have people with a different perspective saying, let's change the images or let's tell the full story. I'm not saying people just get up in the morning and say, let's fail these kids. But when you're fearful of someone or don't know much about them, and you make assumptions about, well, they don't have fathers, they can't succeed. Then I need to tell a plethora of my friends who have succeeded and have become business owners and leaders in this community that they shouldn't be because they don't have fathers.
Thanks to Henry for the call. We go now to Mike in Madison. Mike, hi.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Mike Frontier. I'm chairman of Racine County Youth Coalition. At a recent countywide meeting with some African-American youth in mixed group, I was surprised to hear some of our African-American kids from west of the interstate talking about prejudice and a van pulling up and calling the N-word and shooting BBs at them. This was shocking to me. And yet, I'm sure that's reality for some of our black brothers and sisters. My suggestion is we need to move in the area. 23 major cities are working at becoming compassionate cities where they deal with diversity or political differences and they have forums to address these issues. I think some folks who are prejudiced maybe haven't interacted with people of color. There's a national movement and it needs to be looked at. Compassion is an antidote to bullying. Let's stop talking about the negatives and put some charters of compassion in place in our political life.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Your response.
I'll never argue against compassion. I think we need all that we can get. What I do find is people become a little bit nervous and unsettled when we talk about the issue of racial disparity because they feel like now you've created a firestorm. Now you're calling things out. We can't fix it if we're ignoring it. So I'm not bringing these issues up to be divisive. I'm stating we're very divisive and we don't even know it. Many African Americans say that if you're in the South, you know where you stand. If you're in rural Georgia, you know certain things, where you go, what you don't. But in places like Wisconsin and Minnesota, where people are so nice, they'll smile at you. But then there's all of these undertones and things that happen behind your back or around you. So I'm just bringing up things to say this is here. They're unspoken. Let's address them. I don't want the messenger to be shot because I'm stating things that might not be obvious. But I'm all about solutions, which is why I spoke up.
You're working toward solutions. You're working toward getting a conversation started here. Let's look forward maybe a year. Where would you like the conversation to be a year from now?
Well, I would like for people I'd like to have a greater sense of a greater consensus that there's something to talk about. I'd love to see parents talking with their children about issues of race. Do you see a difference between your friends who are African American or a Latino? I'd like to see employers feeling more comfortable understanding the issues so that they have strategies to begin to diversify their workforce. Unemployment is probably quadruple that for black men as it is for the white, our white counterparts in this community. So I think the talk allows people to realize this is not a fad. It's not a phase. This is reality. And we as a community should be outraged. I should not be the only one that's angry. We should realize that we're talking about it. We feel like a sense of community and there's some group ownership that we are going to work together towards solution and build capacity in the organizations that can address some of the issues like parenting classes or keeping kids from becoming parents when they're younger, staying in school, some supportive organizations that can make a difference. I think that would be a great sign of progress a year from now that people are saying we've identified 11 organizations that can help us in addressing these issues. Let's support them.
Reverend G, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
We've been speaking with Reverend Alex G. He's pastor at the Fountain of Life Covenant Church and CEO of the nonprofit Nehemiah Center of Urban Leadership.